Hello and welcome to ESG Talk, your go-to source for advice and insights on all things environmental, social, and governance. And Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, and risk, and wherever else the waves take us. That's right, it's a crossover episode. It's ESG Talk, it's Off the Books, and it's so much more. Today, I am your intrepid host, Mike Gravano, Off the Books producer and recovering Cherry Coke addict, and I had the pleasure of going to Climate Week, which is what this episode is all about. Climate Week, this year, they talked about turning ambition into action, and this year, they added a little more urgency with their theme, It's Time. And to be candid, I think it's been time for quite some time. The climate is super important, guys. First, we'll hear intros from our guests, who ran the gamut from analysts to practitioners and even a co-founder of Climate Week itself. Then you'll hear ESG Talk host Mandy McReynolds and Off the Books host Steve Soter ask our guests three big questions inspired by conversations around Climate Week. And just a little side note for the Off the Books crowd. We talk about Scopes 1, 2, and 3 emissions. And so if you don't know, that's totally fine. Scope 1 emissions are the direct emissions from sources owned or controlled by a company. Scope 2 emissions are indirect emissions from purchased electricity, steam, heat, and cooling. Scope 3 emissions are all other emissions up and down your value chain connected to your customers and suppliers. So we like to think about it as Scope 1 is what you specifically burn, Scope 2 is what you buy, and Scope 3 is beyond you. Great. Now let's get to the rest of the show.
Well, my name is Paul Dickinson. I am best known for having founded an NGO that used to be called Carbon Disclosure Project. Now it's called CDP, and it's used by like 60% of the world economy for reporting to everybody.
So you no big deal.
Report ones, you report two. Yeah, and you don't have to kneel, but like these nods of respect would be appreciated. I'm also I do a podcast with a lady called Christiana Figueres, who got the Paris Agreement, and her colleague Tom Rivett-Carnac, and they're great fun, called Outrage and Optimism. And I'm very pleased to be an advisor to Workiva.
And also, which we'll get into, the OG of Climate Week.
Yes.
The co-founder of Climate Week.
You said that and I looked it up and it said original gangster. So yes, I am the original gangster.
I love that.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Fallander. I'm the VP of Global ESG at Prologis. And Prologis is the largest real estate company for logistics real estate in the world. We have 1.2 billion square feet of space in 19 countries. And really what we do is we develop and lease space for companies around the world, large companies, large global companies, as well as small and medium-sized businesses. And then we help them also with their sustainability needs by building solar infrastructure, EV truck charging infrastructure, and sustainability solutions.
I'm Emma Cutler. I'm a senior analyst with Verdantix. My research there focuses primarily on climate risk. So I look at physical climate risk, transition risk, focusing mostly on the software that companies are using to address the sort of all things climate risk.
We're asking all of our guests in this episode in less than 1 minute, so 1 minute alone, share one example how you've seen your organization take these climate-related data, regulatory, risk obligations to fuel innovation and enhance financial performance and societal benefit at the same time. So you got 1 minute, tough question. Ready, Steve's going to be timing you.
Right. Yeah, I think for us it's been really interesting, basically building on kind of the excellence that we have in our global real estate portfolio, which already had green building strategies and requirements. We set a net zero goal to achieve net zero across our value chain, scopes 1, 2, and 3, by 2040. And really doing it in a way that wasn't just about setting a goal for ourselves, that's important, but also in a way that helps our customers decarbonize. Mm. So we were able to kind of look at, okay, when we look at our emissions, it's 99.9% is scope 3, and the biggest portion of that is our customers' energy use in our buildings. Wow. So we have that opportunity to not only help them be more efficient by really looking at the data and, you know, really having that automated so we can show them what the opportunities are to bring that down, but then also turning into a business opportunity to say, we can actually do that for you. We have the roof space. We can build the solar. We can help you by putting in the infrastructure for the EV truck charging. And that's something that helps, you know, develop their strategies and relationships. But also, it's really business focused. So for climate, we are really focused on reducing climate risk, but we're also focused on that opportunity, that it could be really integrated into our business model and then also help us with our customers and help them grow.
One thing that we see is just a lot of organizations using sort of this climate financial data, you know, looking at sort of what the impacts are of their portfolios. So that's a big place of innovation right now, is kind of not just looking at like individual assets or asset classes, but really thinking about a full portfolio and what are the risks in that? What are the sort of impacts? So kind of going both ways.
Whenever you think of a character, the richest person in the world makes electric cars. Like, there are absolute fortunes in climate change. 1.1 trillion went into fossil fuels last year. 1.7 trillion went into clean energy and energy efficiency. So we are essentially sitting on a new industrial revolution, and Al Gore said it's going to be bigger than the first industrial revolution, but it's going to move at the speed of the digital revolution. Mm. So I want you just to think in terms of energy being a cost, manage energy, make money, and just you know, allow your mind to be blown by the opportunities across the energy system, nature, and all the things we're going to have to do to get this to turn out right.
Paul, you had a quote recently, and I'm going to paraphrase this here, but basically that with the CSRD, what governments are saying is that the cost of carbon is going to increase and that that will fuel the technological innovation we were just talking about. Of course, that's going to create economic advantages and opportunities. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Well, you know, the memo has arrived on climate change for pretty much everyone in the world. There's extreme weather, which is, you know, if something's true in reality, it must be true in theory. So we're moving along, obviously, maybe different speeds, different countries. You know, China's kind of bet the farm on low carbon technology. But it's, I think, U.S. industry is so creative and powerful in terms of leading so many of these things. So, yeah, there is a cost for carbon. We've had an EU emissions trading scheme for 12, 14 years. It's now going to come into really heavy emitting sectors like steel and cement. We're going to get carbon border adjustment mechanisms. But whether you're talking about state policy like in China, whether you're talking about emissions trading schemes in a Green New Deal in the EU, or if you're looking at the Inflation Reduction Act with like 370 billion of different opportunities for U.S. industries, this is about dollars, frankly. And that's what's so exciting about it, because you know they feed off themselves. And the meta trends of the century are decarbonization and digitization, and they're coming together, and it's good. But the trend is going to be fortunes for people who essentially can take greenhouse gas emissions out of the system and who can take energy out of the system and who can use, for example, the wind and the sun, who will never send you an invoice to run your enterprise. A little bit higher CapEx, zero OpEx. I'll take it.
Oh, I love that.
I've got a financial reporting background, and so I think a lot about disclosure.
Yeah.
How are you thinking about disclosure, the benefits that come with it, particularly in light of that dialogue you were just having?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the first thing is we've been doing voluntary reporting for almost 2 decades. So we have a good practice and a good model for really trying to make sure we have quality data. We've been doing report assurance already, voluntary assurance over that for many years. I think what's changed in this environment is much more collaboration and integration across different parts of the company. So our ESG team, our sustainability solutions team with customers, really looking at how do we make sure we have the data we need for reporting, but I'm spending more and more time with our accounting teams, our SEC reporting team.
I love that.
Internal
so much.
Audit. They're my best friends. they're wonderful, actually. And also with our IT department. So our CTO has been very involved in really looking at how do we take what already has been a focus on data centricity across the company when we think about how do we have data and insights already across our portfolio, how do we then look at that of how do we really mature the ESG metrics to the same level where financial metrics are. So I'd say increased collaboration, increased technology, and kind of IT systems. Another really important collaboration has been with our head of global risk management and thinking about that not just from a general risk perspective, but also from a climate risk perspective. And a big piece of that has been data. So starting a few years ago to work with a global reinsurance company to have data that we can then ingest into our models and really look at, you know, what is the risk? What's the inherent risk for climate risk? Also, how can we get to more of that net risk? There's a lot that we already do that really reduces that risk in terms of how we build our buildings, how we maintain the buildings, proactive engagement with suppliers in a region to make sure we're getting out ahead of, you know, any kind of risks from natural weather disasters, et cetera. I think the other kind of more broader risk is we already have a very long-term focus on our business, so we're already looking, we talk about looking around corners of what's coming up next, and I think with all the regulation, one thing that was helpful for us is we already had a process to look at what was coming, and we started to look at how we're operating in so many countries around the world, what are the things that overlap so that we can make sure our systems are strong enough to efficiently address those risks.
We know that disclosure on its own is not sufficient for managing risks, but it really is an important step towards doing what you need to do. So we see a lot of organizations, kind of using that as their first step. One thing that we've noticed in the past few years is that there's been kind of a huge jump in terms of the maturity of a lot of these organizations and sort of their sort of climate risk knowledge. So, of course, nobody has it entirely figured out, but, a lot of these organizations that have been disclosing climate risks for several years, they have a much better understanding of, what type of information they need, what the challenges are, kind of how to approach a lot of the questions that are kind of coming up here. And so, that disclosure is sort of that way to go from saying, what is climate risk, to actually being prepared to take some action.
I want to read these interesting statistics from an ESG assurance report that you had. And it was saying the Office of the CFO has expanded to partner with the Office of the Chief Sustainability Officer at like 38%. And the CFOs are taking a greater role in funding the responsibility.
That's, definitely a trend that we're seeing is, bringing in the CFO and really trying to integrate ESG risks into sort of the broader risk management of an organization. So you mentioned the CFO kind of taking a larger role, but we also know that for a lot of these sort of, ESG disclosures, it requires data that come from, all across the organization. So, you need HR data, you need EHS data, carbon management data, supply chain, procurement. And so there really is a trend of trying to bring kind of all of those things together so you can get this comprehensive ESG picture.
Are you relying on desktop tools and shared drives? Stuck in a vicious, never-ending cycle of back-and-forth emails? Wish you had more time to proactively manage risk? Stop wasting valuable time corralling colleagues and updating status reports and start spending more time on what matters with Workiva. Create alignment across key stakeholders, yes, all of them, with centralized collaboration. Drive better business decisions with insights on demand and spend more time on value-added work by automating those awful repetitive tasks. Plus, connect your GRC processes with your ESG and financial reporting all in the same platform. Seriously, see why audit and risk teams love Workiva at workiva.com/risk. That's workiva.com/risk.
Well, I do actually want to go back to disclosure. How are you thinking about disclosure broadly, maybe certainly from a regulatory standpoint, but even for stakeholders, investors? It feels a little trickier, if that's the right word, or at least a little more nuanced to think about it right now.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to how we have defined ESG, how we define sustainability. It has always been and continues to be that business focus. So we always think about it through that lens. So when you're doing that, you're working on your disclosure, whether it's regulated disclosure or voluntary disclosure, we're trying to make sure that story comes through about why this is important to our business, why we see this as important to our customers. Our customers all, our top customers all have net zero goals or climate goals. So we need to make sure we're showing how our business aligns with that customer centricity, that customer focus. I think the other thing we think about is we're also very data driven. So we're going to be transparent. We're going to be able to share that information. And so making sure that information is out there so that we're providing the information that's needed by our investors, by the communities where we operate, so they can see us as a trusted partner and see us as someone creating value for them. We also have had a very proactive outreach with investors over the years, both on the public side of our business, but also in our strategic capital business. We have a lot of investors around the world. We have a lot of European investors. So, and they are digging into the data. They have very detailed questions. So we have to have that level of disclosure and that proactive communication to make sure we're helping them meet their needs as they're getting more pressure on their side.
Suzanne, I'm curious. You've said you've been doing voluntary reporting for 20 years and that it's all about how we define sustainability in ESG. Has that definition evolved?
I mean, I think it's always been connected to the business, and that's how it's been defined. I think what we're all getting better at, not just our company, but I think others, of getting those concrete examples of how. So when we talk about risk management and reducing risk and identifying that, how do you then have those examples and be able to quantify that in better ways? And same thing on the opportunity side. So being able to, you know, share what does that look like? What are those case studies on the value it creates for investors? What are the longer term systemic kind of changes we can help drive? One of the things we've been working a lot on with others in the industry is sustainable building materials. So how do you start to quantify what that could look like over time for that opportunity on decarbonization?
On the show today, we've got a practitioner view, we've got an analyst view, and we have Paul Dickinson, who is the co-founder of Climate Week and CDP. So it really brings us home, but we're ending with all of our guests this one question. The theme is, it's time. What does it's time mean to you?
For me, I mean, I've been doing this my whole career in one way or another on both the investor side, research side, and on the corporate side. And I think what I see is it's time. People are actually now moving. I never thought I would see this regulated or the calls for regulation on a global level. So I think it's time to mature the data. I think it's time to get more automation of how this data is produced. I think it's time to really drive that integration in an even greater way that we're seeing within company strategy. And I'm really excited about Prologis because I think we've got all the pieces in place. I've got the executive support. I've got the team, the right teams all working together. And I just think it's going to be a really important year to take it to the next level.
It's time to kind of take what we've learned from the disclosures, you know, of course, making sure that organizations who are still new to disclosing are kind of continuing to build that up. But moving to that next step of, you know, how do we manage these risks? How do we reduce these risks? And really kind of using the information that's, you know, been going into all of these disclosures to do something that's good for the world and helps to mitigate the risks that we're facing.
Governments really need our help. And I'm talking city governments, I'm talking regional governments, I'm talking national governments. They want to work with investors and corporations to develop regulation, policy, subsidy, remove whatever, add whatever, and get this done. There are huge commercial opportunities for the nations that move first and fastest. But it's you know, you can't just kind of sit there with your arms folded and be waiting for the people over there to fix it. This is the time for us to all come together, to collaborate, to brainstorm, to do the kind of give and take and the kind of, well, we'd like that done, well, we could do that, and make it happen. Because, you know, I was about to say something rude. Am I allowed to say something rude?
Say
oh, please.
Go for
please.
It. Go for
There's
it.
Only so much polishing of this turd we can do. You know, there comes a point at which you have to say, actually, I'm going to just scoop it straight up. Throw that down the dumpster, and then it's gone.
It's also time to capitalize on the opportunity.
Yeah.
To take the opportunity. Yeah. I mean, there are real reasons behind why companies and other innovators should be looking at this as a massive opportunity. And, you know, candidly, as an accountant, I mean, that really speaks to my dollars and cents kind of heart there. So, anyway, I just
No, my favorite one in CDP, we have this huge supply chain program where we have, like, buyers, you know, spending $5 trillion a year, I think $6 trillion a year, and sometimes I have the opportunity just to speak to them a little bit, and I tell them something that they kind of know, but I feel like it's my job to say it. I say to them, who pays your suppliers' energy bills? You do.
That's right.
So it's absolutely legitimate to be rolling those efficiencies all the way up the supply chain, capture them, share technologies, you know, share ideas, make sure everything's kind of best in class, and run things super efficiently, which is what the best corporations in the world are so good at.
Thank you for joining us for those awesome conversations. Some takeaways we want to leave you with. Number one, leverage data-driven insights to foster innovation. Number two, build reliability and accountability. Number three, it's time to seize the opportunity ahead of you. I'm Mike Gravagno, and you heard from Steve Soter and Manny McReynolds, and this has been Off the Books and ESG Talk presented by Workiva. Please subscribe to both shows, leave a review, and tell your buddies if you like the show. Either or, we hope you like both. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave us a note in the comments or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.